This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money presented by DraftKings, and right now you can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets over at DraftKings. Download the app, use the promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. It's that simple for new customers, and again, if you're a customer already, every day a no-sweat same-game parlay at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Got you back, Sharp Money, doing a little NBA. I'm Al Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. As we got you in here on a Tuesday, December 5th, we'll get back into the NFL coming up in just a little bit with all the quarterback injuries. If we hear anything on Trevor Lawrence during the show, which we could, he had the MRI today, we'll relay that to you. It's funny because I think it was Shady McCoy last night. He tweeted, he's like, I don't understand all the hype about Trevor Lawrence. Here's the thing. You might not believe that Trevor Lawrence is a top five quarterback, but when the backup comes in, you start to understand the hype about Trevor Lawrence. And that is the point. There's only them all, you know, again, I always like to say there's 10 great quarterbacks on the planet, and that includes India, that includes China, that includes Russia, because trust me, if they could sling it, we'd go grab them, and you'd have your boy from India slinging it in the NFL. There's 32 opportunities. There are probably 8 to 10 that are great. There's probably 10 to 15, you know, 10 to 15, 5 more that are really good, and the rest of them are okay. Lawrence is one of the really good ones, and his backup isn't near what he is.
First of all, a lot of great things you said there. The problem is if you go to India.
I was giving your peeps a props India.
If he could sling it, we'll take him. The problem is Bryce Young is equivalent to Cam Newton size over there. So that's let's start. Let's be real here. We don't have too many guys coming.
You're an anomaly. You're like what would you say? Mao Yang. You're like Yao Ming walking amongst your relatives in India.
Did you just pitch $1 million arm, but football? $1 million arm was the
movie,
contest.
The baseball movie.
Yeah. Indian pitch.
Pitch it for football?
Yes, I did.
But no, you're absolutely right about that. I think sometimes some of the quarterbacks we see, like Trevor Lawrence, a perfect example. C.J. Beathard, the backup. That was his 31st game, or it might have been his 30th game, and he had never led a fourth quarter overtime comeback victory, and they got the ball in overtime. And I felt bad for the people in Survivor because remember, a tie and you're eliminated, and you just had no hope with that team. You felt like you were in serious trouble once Lawrence went down. And it felt like the Jaguars, to your point, Patrick, some of the players' reaction and Trevor Lawrence's reaction, you thought the season might be going up in flames at that moment right there in Duval.
Yeah. And the Browning thing's fascinating because Browning's throwing some lollipops now. There's not a lot of zip on the ball, but it just kept on getting there. And they shortened up the game plan a little bit as far as, like, he wasn't pushing it downfield as much, but he was very effective. And it helps to have Ja'Marr Chase, who went for 11 and 149.
I know I'm putting you guys both on the spot and don't have to spend too much time thinking about it. If you could take one receiver in the National Football League, let's assume JJ's healthy, Hill, Adams, Ja'Marr Chase, who are you taking? I was watching Chase last night and going, this guy is so good.
I want to say Tyreek Hill. His sound went out. I would say Tyreek Hill, but here's the problem. Not every quarterback can throw it far enough for Tyreek Hill. So, and he's great at catching the ball and making plays in space as well. But that was the one that jumped out to me because I think Tyreek Hill is right now the MVP in the league. I think he's the MVP. I think he's having a better year.
Who's that, Tyreek?
Yeah. But here's what I said.
You know the last wide receiver to win it?
Jerry Rice, 1987. Yeah.
That sounds right.
Nobody's ever won it.
No.
That was the offensive player of the year, probably.
With Rice, think about it. Generally, there's a quarterback that's going to get the award for throwing to a player like Rice. Tua's not going to get it throwing to Tyreek.
No wide receivers ever won it.
Can I just get credit for the confidence with which I answered it and I gave a year?
It was a very, very specific year, too. Wait, I want to go back to Amal's question. I apologize because, guys, my audio went out for a second, but I want to go back to Amal's question. I think he was saying rank the wide receivers.
Just pick one guy in the process of that?
You could have one, any receiver. Picking? I said my initial thought was Tyreek Hill, but here's the problem. You may not have a quarterback who can get Tyreek Hill the ball doing what he does best, which is just burn people down the sidelines.
I think there's a handful, right? It would be Jefferson, Chase, Hill.
Yeah.
I think I put Davante Adams in the mix.
So would
I. Yeah, still. Yeah. He still got it.
Because he is just, every time I watch him, I'm more impressed. So those would and who am I missing, guys?
No, those for me are the
AJ
top four.
Brown.
I don't think
I'll
he's
tell
on
you,
that
dude.
Tier.
I'll tell you, dude, that I was clueless. Every time I watch Puka Nacua, it's pretty obvious that he's not a flash in the pan.
No.
He's insane.
No.
He's insane.
And his build, like for a rookie, sometimes rookies come in and you're like, they have to get up to speed to get their size up. No, he's like a thick receiver who can move.
By the way, to your point about Puka Nacua, people forget he's a guy that got recruited by Washington, transferred to BYU. He's an absolute dude. I mean, this guy has become Matthew Stafford's number one and favorite target, even with Cooper Kupp in the lineup.
Right. Yeah, and Kupp had one of the great receiving seasons of all time. Kupp got a first-place vote in 19 for the MVP.
Yeah.
That's how good his season was, which you never see.
I think he's in the mix, Kupp, absolutely.
For what?
For our question right here.
No chance.
For
you're picking one? You take Kupp over the others?
Because you can move the chains with him. It's a little different. He's not the big play threat, but like he's so reliable and consistent, you can just keep moving the chains. It's like an extension of the run game.
I'm going to tell you the one thing to me, I love Justin Jefferson personally. He's my favorite player out of the four. But the guy I would probably take, I'd go Hill second. Ja'Marr Chase is so physically strong. I think that's what makes him so great. Like Ja'Marr just... he bullies those DBs out there.
It's hard. Chase is one that's overlooked because I think he comes across a shorter. Jefferson's more lanky.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. Chase is so athletic. He high points the ball so well, so it's not an issue.
He's listed at 6 foot. There's no shot he's 6 foot. He's 5'9".
No chance.
He's 5'9".
By the way, I love the fact that after the drop last night on a crucial third down, they came right back to him on fourth down. It wasn't a good throw. He makes the play, and then they end up tying the game.
Yeah, I don't know if you're wrong. My top three would be of those three. It would be Chase, Jefferson, and Hill in some order, but Davante Adams is such a stud. I'd have him right there. The big guy's got Cooper Kupp in the mix.
He's in the mix. He's got to be in the conversation. He wasn't in my three. I think my three would be Hill, Chase, JJ.
I got no problem with that.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that one either. I mean, Hill's entering rarefied air. He's gotten faster, which is weird. Just something about it. All he needs is a dunk like Tua that's just accurate, throws him those softballs that he just out in front of him, and he just doesn't stop his momentum. It's just insane.
Well, could you imagine if it was Josh Allen and Tyreek Hill, and Allen just like, you know what, dude? Just run forever, and I'm going to throw it as far and high as I can and get under it.
They played 12 games, right? The Dolphins have.
Yep.
He is 483 yards away from Calvin Johnson's 1,964-yard record.
Oh, yeah, he's going.
He's going over that.
Oh, he's killing it. He might have 2,000 yards this year.
That's what. And by the way, has any quarterback stood out to you where you go, that guy's the MVP?
That's my point.
No.
That's my point.
No. But here's the thing. Last night, I had these in my notes for the other day. I don't know why we didn't talk about it. Last non-quarterback is what? 2012 and Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
Last non-quarterback was 2012, Adrian Peterson. And I wrote down generally a 2K wide receiver or somebody close. Like you mentioned, I wrote down Jerry Rice. Remember, Montana won it twice. Steve Young won it another year when Rice went off because you're going to give it to the quarterback that's throwing and adding up all the yardage and the stats.
To Patrick's point, said, two is shorter odds to win the MVP.
Two is shorter than Hill?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That's ridiculous.
Tua doesn't have the year without Tyreek Hill just burning people.
No, but Patrick makes a great point, right? He just gave three MVP years of 49ers quarterbacks with Jerry Rice. The year I mentioned 87, what I confused was Jerry Rice had 22 touchdowns in 12 games, an obscene number, but he still didn't win MVP.
See, the problem with betting awards markets always is the donk factor. There's so many donks with votes for these awards.
It's like the Heisman.
And yeah, they're just kind of like, oh, this quarterback had a good year. He's the MVP. How many times you watch him play? Three times? Two times? One time? Oh, you looked up the box score? That's how you're voting for MVP?
Dude, Dan Campbell won Coach of the Year before the season started.
Brock Purdy is the favorite for MVP. He's not even the MVP of his team.
I agree with you completely.
Yeah, totally agree. He's 3-1.
He's 3-1. He had an opportunity to prove he was an MVP without a bunch of weapons where you could say, you know what? Brock Purdy is the leader of this team. He's the best player on this team, and they lost three straight.
Hold on. Okay, settle down. Let's throw it up because I want to get a pick from both of you on the list that we're showing right now. Throw it up for the boys. Brock Purdy, Dak, Jalen, Patrick Mahomes, Tua, Lamar Jackson.
I hate to say it, guys.
Pick one up that list.
I'm going Dakota Prescott. Nobody rags on him more than I do.
I'm going Dak Prescott.
I won't do Dak because I said last week bet him at 9-1 before it moves, and I didn't bet it. Some Tyreek Hill is my MVP. I stand by.
No, I said on the board, donk.
Lamar.
Just as you called everybody donks, you gave somebody off the board. Look at you, cheetah. All right, good stuff. When we come back, we're talking to Leger Douzebe, CBS Sports.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money presented by DraftKings. Leger Douzebe joining us here on the program. Lucky to have him for a little bit. CBS Sports, NFL, ESPN. College football as well. SiriusXM, you can find Leger on Twitter at Leger Douzebe. Of course, played DN in the league for 10 years. And we say hi, Leger. How are you?
I'm doing great, fellas. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, thanks. Thank you very much. So I want to start here because he's catching a lot of heat. But I actually been really impressed with this guy, how he's handled the situation he's been put in this year. And that is a former coach of yours, Robert Saleh. And this is an impossible spot because obviously what's happening with Wilson and the backup situation. You had an opportunity. I think you were with him for at least a year, Leger. Can you give us an idea of his personality? Because I gained respect for how he's handled this year with the Jets.
Yeah, the one thing I can tell you about Robert Saleh is he's 100% authentic. Like the guy you see with all the energy on the sideline, the guy that's running up and down stadium stairs before the game, that's who he is. He's a great motivator, great leader of men. And you said it, right? I feel bad for my guy, right? Because we know the situation in New York, right? A lot went into getting Aaron Rodgers to pair with that defense. That's a championship-type defense, right? And four plays into the season, they lose Aaron Rodgers, right? So I know a lot of Jet fans have been up in arms in regards to not having a subsequent or what they call a subsequent backup for Aaron Rodgers. But I would always ask them this question, right? When you look at most of the teams in the league, with, you know, the exception of Jake Browning having an amazing night last night, I think people tend to forget what happened the week before versus the Steelers, right? We're all so, like, we react to things in real time, right? We kind of forget the big picture, right? Browning struggled the week before versus the Pittsburgh Steelers, yep, but he lit up the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I literally were tweeting a few Jet fans last night saying, if the Jets had signed Jake Browning in the offseason, you probably would have had a conniption, right? So it's like, when you lose an elite quarterback, right, most likely your season's over, right? We see Minnesota, they got Josh Dobbs. And, you know, that Cinderella story seems like it's about to end. Like, the slipper seemed like it was left on the steps before midnight, and that story's going to be over. He's lost two in a row. There's talk that maybe, you know, Jaren Hall could potentially start again now that he's healthy, so we'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens with Jake Browning throughout the season. But the Cleveland Browns, right, they went and got Joe Flacco. Looked good for, what, 3.5 quarters? And then the Rams just suffocated him at the end of that game, and they ended up losing. So, in this league, if you don't have a guy under center, you really don't have a chance to win a game. Now, could you technically be competitive with a decent backup? Yes, but you got to think about it. In the offseason, people are talking about Gardner Minshew and Jacoby Brissett. Neither one of those guys wanted to come to New York knowing that Aaron Rodgers was coming because they knew they wouldn't have an opportunity to play. They both went to situations where they thought that maybe I have an opportunity to start. Brissett going to the Commanders, and then we saw Gardner Minshew. It actually worked out for him. You hate to see Anthony Richardson hurt, but he ends up starting for them and has them in playoff contention. So you can get mad all you want, but just like every other team, when you lose a bona fide Hall of Famer, most likely your season's done.
I love the breakdown on your assertion of Jake Browning. You're absolutely right. I want to ask you something. You're in a unique position. You played for the Jets and Giants, and then you played in smaller markets like Jacksonville and Tennessee. Quantify for people what's the difference when a team is going as bad as the Jets and Giants are right now in that market compared to the smaller markets I mentioned.
Yeah, it's magnified. I don't think people understand what it truly means to play in the New York market. I was in the New York market for most of my career. So, like, I understand it. Like, any one mistake you make, it's like you're under a magnifying glass, right? It's quantified times 10. So, you look at Zach Wilson and what he's been through with the New York Jets. And I know a lot of people felt a way about some of my tweets earlier this week. And there were, quote unquote, I put quotation mark, rumors that supposedly, you know, the staff came to him and they were thinking about giving him the reins again to start. And supposedly he was reluctant to take, you know, the reins and start, which, again, I don't know the truth in that. Was this a conversation with players? If it was, there's a bigger issue, right? Because I think Aaron Rodgers stated it perfectly. Some things need to stay in the locker room. Some of those stories should not be getting out to the media pundits. Like, why a personal conversation I'm having with my teammate is getting out is a bigger question that Zach Wilson needs to ask himself. But I actually said I don't blame him for feeling this way, right? If you look at it as a whole, Robert Saleh, my guy, came out vividly week in and week out while he was being berated by media saying Zach Wilson gives us the best opportunity to win. And people were saying, this can't be true. How is this true? Well, maybe you should believe the guy that's in practice with these guys every single day, because they went to Tim Boyle and we saw what happened. They went to Trevor Siemian and we saw what happened. Now everybody wants to throw Zach back into the fray. So you got to think, we talked about what the media market is in New York. Like, everything you do is magnified, and he's been in a roller coaster for his career. Like, this kid probably has some of the toughest mental stability that I've seen because of what he's been through. He's been benched like 3 times, and each time he's been asked to start again. So that hurts you as a young player coming into the NFL. Talk about, you know, building and getting a maturation in the league and knowing what to do. It's hard to build that confidence when every time you do something, you get benched, but then they try to go back to you. So I came out and said, I honestly don't blame him if he did say that. Now, he didn't say he wasn't going to start at all. He said he's reluctant. Like, you can have those thoughts. I think people tend to forget the human element of players, right? We're just like everybody else. We go through things, and when certain situations happen to us, I can see why he would be reluctant to go back and start, especially with, you know, Aaron Rodgers getting hurt, the offensive line having injuries. Supposedly he was saying, you know, I'm scared about getting hurt. But to me, I think it's more mental for Zach right now in this scenario.
Legay Doosable doing a great job here. CBS Sports, of course, ESPN, talking NFL on Sharp Money. So the Jets are hosting Houston this weekend. And, of course, you played in San Francisco. I think DeMeco Ryans was on that staff as well. Let's talk about what he's done. He's got a 7-5 team, Legay, with a rookie quarterback. This is one of the top three stories of the NFL season thus far.
Yeah, and it was interesting. So I was on a little bit early, you know, got to hear you guys chop it up about MVP odds, and I was surprised that the youngster wasn't on the list as far as odds with C.J. Stroud. I actually have him third on my ballot right now, and I know you guys are saying Dakota Prescott should win it, and he's been masterful ever since that beat down by the San Francisco 49ers. But I would tell you guys to not hold, you know, Brock Purdy to the assumption that he's a system quarterback. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo had success, but he didn't have this type of success in his offense. He's elevated Kyle Shanahan's offense. I mean, the way he's able to anticipate and throw, especially in the middle of the field. And the thing is, with San Francisco, they can beat you up any way you want, right? They can bully ball you with the run game with CMC and Debo. They can get on the edge with the screen game. But then Brock Purdy can pick you apart in the middle of the field with Ayuk and George Kittle. I just think when you look at his numbers, right, number one in completion percentage, number one in passes 10 yards down the field or more. So it's not like he's checked down Charlie. He's throwing the ball down the field. I say, to me, he should have the betting odds. And I said this earlier in the season when they were undefeated. I said he should be the favorite for MVP, and people looked at me crazy just because of their teams. Like, we tend to forget, right? Like, when the 49ers, I think you guys brought that up, when, you know, Steve Young was quarterback, you look at the pieces he had around him, right? When Joe Montana was quarterback, look at the pieces he had around him. So it's hard to win in this league if you don't have pieces around you. Even Patrick Mahomes, right, when he won MVP. Tyreek Hill, right, he had Travis Kelce at tight end. It's hard to win if you don't have pieces on offense. So I honestly think Brock Purdy should be number one on the list. I got Dak Prescott number two. And then, like you guys, I got Tyreek Hill. I think he should be actually number three on that list.
First of all, I got to give you credit. You made a great argument. You really genuinely swayed me on the perspective of Brock Purdy on that one. I want to ask you, as a former defensive player, what are you seeing from Kansas City that is not the same this year that we've seen in years past, minus the fact they don't have the great Tyreek Hill on the perimeter?
Yeah, I think the Kansas City Chiefs are having an offensive identity crisis, right? I don't think they know what their identity is on offense. For the longest, when Tyreek Hill was there, it was throw the ball down the field. And now, you know, last year was we're going to figure out how to get the ball to Travis Kelce. And now with these young receivers, and I'm not saying Kelce has lost his stuff. He just hasn't looked as explosive. Now, we know he's kind of been dealing with a little bit of some injuries this season. Just hasn't been as explosive. The funny thing is this team is led by his defense. And that's the biggest issue right now, right? If you look at their linebacker position, they're down to their third linebacker, right? Nick Bolton has been hurt. He's out. Tranquil, who they brought in to be like the third linebacker, he's now injured and out. And then you look at Cook, the safety. He ended up getting hurt in that game last week versus the Green Bay Packers. So that's where they really got hurt this last week, was on the defensive side of the ball. And if you look at it, I believe in every game they won, they were holding people to 20 points or less, even when the offense wasn't scoring above 20 points. So I think that's the biggest issue for the Kansas City Chiefs right now, right? They're led by their defense, which is not an issue if the offense can come to the party. They just don't I don't think they know what their offense is. I think they need to lean on Isaiah Pacheco more in the run game. They did that in the Super Bowl, and it really boded well for them, and they won that Super Bowl versus the Eagles because they lean on the O-line and run game. I think they got to continue to do that going forward.
Okay, we'll say goodbye. So your money's on Brock right now, Brock Purdy MVP, as we sit here on December 5th.
Brock Purdy, and honestly, I would sprinkle a little money on Tyreek Hill just because I think I don't know if the 49ers will lose again, but I believe the Eagles and the Cowboys will lose again. I think the Chiefs will lose again. Miami's probably going to lose two more down the stretch. So I think Tyreek Hill is a guy you might want to sprinkle a little filler on.
We love it. We love that. That was a lot of fun. We should do it again. Leger Douzable, of course, CBS Sports, ESPN, SiriusXM as well. Find him on Twitter. He's very good. Leger Douzable on Twitter. Thank you, Leger. Appreciate you.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. He was great.
That was awesome.
Was tremendous. Even came with the Dakota, Prescott, for you, Amal.
Yeah, thank you. But I tell you what, he made a great argument on Purdy. My knock was exactly what he actually kind of fought against, which is he's got tons of talent. Well, you look at other guys, they had talent around him, and they didn't achieve the same thing.
No, you're right. What is the Tyreek number right now, big guy?
11-1 I saw this morning.
11?
I'm about to bet it here at Circa at 25-1.
It's still 25 here? Oh, nice.
All right, we'll keep this conversation going. I'm enjoying it, and we'll get to Lakers hosting the Suns tonight in the in-season tournament.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN pros get the picks every day over at VSiN.com. Just go to VSiN.com/subscribe. You can sign up for the introductory offer of $9.99. That's cheap. See if you like it. Pro tools, pro tips, pro picks at a glance. We categorize them, who to tail, who to fade. It's all there. VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we got you back here. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, live from Las Vegas. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. We're going to bring in an old friend. And I'm excited to talk to Dan Wojcicki, of course, LA Times NBA writer at Dan Wojcicki Sports. He is a Chicago native, yet I think he's adopted LA at this point. He covers the Lakers, he's covered the Clippers in the past. He's covered the Chargers, the Angels, the Dodgers, USC. Did I get everybody in the mix there, Mr. Wojcicki?
I was the shortest tenured LA Kings beat writer, maybe in the history of the NHL. That was the job I was hired to do at the LA Times. And like 72 hours after I accepted the position and like, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit this, had ordered like Hockey for Dummies and like a book about hockey analytics, like was like ready to like spend all this money on like hockey literature to like study up, right? Like how to have fun in Manitoba or whatever I was reading. The Chargers then officially moved to LA and I switched beats. So 72 hours, never covered a hockey practice. But
you got the book, you know, to show for it.
I was wrong about the LA Kings either. Yeah, still got them.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. Explain to a national audience, like, covering the Lakers, then it's the Lakers, it's a Dodgers town, and it's a USC town. Is that how you'd rank it, and then everybody else? Because there's a lot of fervor for those three.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dodgers won, probably, right?
Fair.
Because it's sort of like the unifier. Like, there are Clippers fans that exist. And then, like, so, you know, it's not entirely a Laker city. But I think Dodgers are, like, you know, like, Vin Scully is, like, the voice of summer, right, to generations of people here. And then I'd say really closely behind it, it's the Lakers and then then USC. And then UCLA basketball, too. Can crack that
good
at
one.
Times. But yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre having covered, you know, both the Chargers and the Clippers. I was talking about this with someone the other day. They fall into this weird category where they are bigger national stories than they are local ones. And that's rare in sports. Like, that usually doesn't happen. And that's not to say that people here don't care about the Clippers or that people don't here care about the Chargers. In fact, like, I would argue that the ones that do care about those teams, like, care about them passionately, like, incredibly passionately. But it is just sort of like, you know, it's not, you would think that, like, something like James Harden demanding a trade to your team or, like, something like that would dominate conversation here for a month, you know, and it doesn't. The way it did in Philadelphia, with the way, like, him wanting out would in Philadelphia, and it didn't. It happened. And then it's kind of like, okay, like, we move on to the next thing. It's a bizarre, but, like, nationally, like, James Harden on the Clippers is obviously a very big story. You know, it's on the panel shows and all of that stuff. It's just a bizarre, it can be a bizarre sports town in that way.
Dan, let's go to the Lakers. They play a crucial game in the play-in tournament against Phoenix tonight. They're hosting them, had a good comfort behind victory in Phoenix last month. But the difference for this team is when AD plays well, he averages 26 and they win. In a loss, he only averages 19. Why the inconsistency with a guy that many, including myself, thought many years ago would have been the best player in the world by this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is I think I would bet without looking. Well, gosh, I hate to say bet. I don't want to bet, guys. All right, don't hold me to that. I would guess that those numbers are also tied to free throw attempts, right? And that the Lakers are a better team when Anthony Davis is more physically aggressive. And, you know, when he's more physically aggressive, he goes to the line more, he scores more. You know, I think it is, there is an element of sort of like, I think sometimes we point the blame at the wrong guy for the slow Anthony Davis games. Big guys don't give the ball to themselves, right? Like, it does take a concerted effort, and it should take a concerted effort as a team to do that. One of the issues that the Lakers have is that they feel that they've got enough offensive talent that if, like, one guy doesn't have it going, they can kind of look in other directions. And you know, and AD is such a competent and, I mean, even more than competent. I mean, he's one of the best defensive players, you know, in the world, if not the best. That, like, he can still contribute on nights when he's not scoring and make a really big difference. So that, like, that they don't always feel like they need to force the issue with him. But I think it's important, especially against, you know, in a game tonight. Like, you know, it's not like Phoenix has the world's greatest shot blocking. You know, but Jusuf Nurkić is a big dude. He does foul a lot. I think attacking him, getting AD to the line, keeping AD in the paint and not, you know, that jump shot just has not been there the last few seasons. It's bizarre. He's a good free throw shooter. You watch him shoot. He makes shots. It's just not really a strength of his, and it hasn't been since the bubble. But keeping him engaged on pick and rolls and at the rim and getting the ball is, like, the most important thing for the Lakers. When they do that, they're really, really good.
Dan Wojcicki joining us, LA Times here, Sharp Money. Have you noticed, two-part question, have you noticed increased intensity with the in-season tournament? And then how about the matchup tonight? I do like the Suns just because I don't know if the Lakers can guard the perimeter with those two and Booker and Durant, but tell me those two. Have you noticed an increase in intensity, Dan?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the Lakers have been pretty open about sort of their desire to win this because of the prestige of the NBA. No, it's because of $500,000. It's 100% for the money. Right. They've been very open about They want the money, right? Yeah, they've been more motivated. I mean, I think they've played with more intensity. Look, the pool was not the hardest. That helped. But they never really took the foot off the gas in any of these games. And I expect this to be a pretty intense game. You know, the Lakers had a couple of days off. You know, they practiced, I think, for the first time in a month yesterday. So you know, they really only have one injured regular rotation piece in Gabe Vincent. So I would anticipate this to be a pretty high intensity game, and the atmosphere will be great. They've been a good home team this season, but you know, as far as Booker and Durant, I mean, it's going to be an issue, right? Like, so the Lakers have been kind of making do over the last, I would say, month-ish, really since that game in Phoenix. Actually, was when they made the lineup change with Cam Reddish and Torian Prince as sort of the primary wing defenders. And, you know, Cam Reddish was a punchline in a lot of places in this league for a couple of years, as a guy who was just, you know, all the talent in the world, couldn't find a home, couldn't figure it out, all that stuff, like wasted talent, stuff like that. He's become sort of an argument for opportunity and role definition. The Lakers have given him a role, and it has been very, very clearly defined. And he is a guy physically who can credibly guard, you know, either of those guys as much as anybody can. You know, I mean, those guys are going to make incredibly hard shots. You know, two of the best scorers in the league. But you know, the X factor to me, Patrick, is going to be Jared Vanderbilt. It'll be his second game. He's another really versatile defender, a guy that could put on either of those guys and use those guys in stretches. But I mean, he's played, you know, 23 minutes this season, and so how much can they count on him? How much, you know, how new do they want to be in this game? It's an interesting question. I think it's a hard game. I think it's, I mean, maybe this is just sort of like the football fan in me, but it's one of those things, like, it's always really hard to beat a team three times. And like, they played them three times here in pretty short order to start the season, and they've won twice. But they haven't played Devin Booker yet. And, you know, if Devin Booker is the best player on the court, I think Phoenix probably wins.
Yeah, we got about a minute remaining. From your perspective, would you rate the in-season tournament a success, indifferent, or something that you'd probably scrap moving forward?
100 out of 100 success. It's been great. I think it's weird. The courts are silly sometimes and stuff like that. But, I mean, here we are, guys, talking about it. You know, in L.A., I did an interview earlier this morning with NPR, local NPR here. Wow. And public radio generally doesn't talk basketball during drive time. I do that interview three times a season. I usually do it in the preseason, like right before the season opener. I'm sorry. I usually do it around the trade deadline, and I do it at the end of the year, like clockwork. And when I got that call or email, you know, a couple of days ago to see if I could do it, I was like, oh, wow. Like, the tournament, like, I mean, it's made NPR sense. It's crossed over, you know? It's like, if Terry Gross is super into the tournament, it wasn't Terry Gross. But you know what I mean? Like, and so I think, I think the, like, it's accomplished what it's accomplished. Like, you know, it's not, no one is playing this for the prestige at this point. It's still for the cash. But I think as long as that interest is back, it's going to be here next year. I think that's an incredibly safe bet. And, you know, as long as guys keep playing hard, I think it's worked. The intensity has been great.
Dan Wojcicki, I hope you and the family are doing well, Dan. It's good to hear from you. Dan Wojcicki Sports on Twitter, thanks, LA Matt. Times.
It's good to
thank
hear
you,
from
Dan.
You too.
No, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. There goes Dan Wojcicki. Does a great job. He is so funny, and he's a great writer. When we come back, we'll talk about Suns Lakers, and we have to talk about the madness going on with Luton and Arsenal.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money presented by DraftKings, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We welcome you in. And happy holidays, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, sandwiching our guy Adam Burke. It's a Berkey Tuesday here on Sharp Money. And, of course, Adam Burke is our managing editor over at VSIN.com. And as I take a look, he's got a ton of plays. He's got a ton of plays in the bowl games, a ton of college basketball plays. But here's the thing. Everybody knows Berkey. He's one of the good guys. So when we heard after the Jags bounced a bunch of Survivor contests last night that Adam Burke is one of 30 Circa Survivor contestants remaining. And Amal Shaw told us earlier, right now, that ticket equals, what'd you say, Amal, about 280K?
Correct.
Okay, 280K. The three of us, Amal, Dustin, and myself, we got excited because, and here's the thing, remember when we put our $1,000 future on the 40-1 Bengals? And Adam texted me, and he said, hey, can I get a piece of that? And I said, yes, but we want a piece of your Survivor. And he said, no problem. I have the text right here. I'm reading it. So, Amal, I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
Dustin Sweetelson, I want to congratulate you. And, of course, I'm always going to start with me because I'm an egotist. I want to say congratulations to me. And a thank you to Adam Burke because we're in on the 280. So I think this should be a conversation about what we're going to do moving forward, Adam. Welcome. And, again, thank you, teammate.
Are you able to send me that text? Because I don't exactly remember that one.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I'll send it over.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
Yeah, no problem.
I mean, I know you're a man of honor, so, you know.
Starts with honor, ends with honor over here. And, okay, I guess maybe I'm fibbing a little bit, but all kidding aside, congratulations. This is, to be one of 30 remaining, why don't we just start with how you feeling? Like, we'll get into strategy, we'll get into what's going on moving forward, but it's got to feel pretty cool, no?
Yeah, you know, it was pretty chill for a while, because there was so much time to go. And then the Lions lose on Thanksgiving when we had the Cowboys. And it was like, okay, like, you know, now this is kind of narrowing down quite a bit. And then, last night, the text back and forth through my partner and I with the Bengals finding a way to beat the Jaguars. It's a great situation to be in. You know, there's obviously still a lot left to go in terms of picking winners in these games. And also a lot of discussions being had, you know, about sort of creating partnerships and splits and all those kinds of things. And, you know, my partner, Mark Goldberg, SpookyExpress.com is his website, brought me in on this. I've known him for a long time. So happy to be in it with him. And, you know, we're just kind of taking it one day at a time and seeing where those conversations lead, and also trying to figure out who the hell we want to take and sweat on Sunday or Monday.
Who are some of the more prominent teams that you would have left right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit difficult because at this point in time, there really aren't a whole lot of entries that have many good teams left. You know, I mean, we structured this to the point where we're in decent shape for Christmas. Other entries may be in a little bit better of a position depending on who they still have. But, you know, I mean, this week we've got teams like Houston's out there, Green Bay is out there. Cleveland is still out there. If we want to go with the fight in Joe Flacco's, that could be a possibility as well. The Saints will be a very popular team going up against Carolina since they can't seem to beat anybody. And like I said, we were on the Bucs last week. So that was actually the first time that we've picked against Carolina so far this season, even though they've lost 11 of their 12 games.
Wow. Let's talk strategy for week 14. And when we heard that you were one of the 30 remaining, we started doing the math. And as Amal said, it's close to your ticket right now you're holding is close to 280K. You obviously have a partner. But then let's go back to what I asked the boys earlier, because I don't know the legalities around this. Is there a chopping scenario? Like, if the 30 contestants remaining in Circa got together outside of Circa, I'm not pretending that Circa would have anything to do with this, and you guys started to work out chops, is that a possibility?
Yeah, so Circa can have no part in any of it. Jeff Benson's been pretty clear about that on social media over the last few years. And I last year's was split. I don't know how many people actually split it, but they did come to an agreement on it. So, you know, there are some people that kind of help facilitate those types of deals, you know, because there is a lot of legality to it, you know, contracts and all those kinds of things. So it is something that is being discussed by a lot of different people. We have been part of some of those discussions, not just this week, but last week as well. So we're just waiting to kind of see how things sort of shake out. But the big thing is, you know, when you do get down to X number and you talk about splitting, you know, the prize, which obviously the first place prize is the only prize here in this thing, everybody involved has to agree to it. So that is something that, you know, when you've got 30 different entries on top of all the partners that are involved and all of that, getting everybody on the same page, maybe a little bit premature for this week. Who knows? We'll see how all that kind of plays out. But, you know, look, I mean, there's also still 5 games left to pick. So, you know, you got week 14, 15, 16, actually 6. 14, 15, 16, Christmas, you know, and all of that. So there's still a lot left to go here and, you know, a lot of analyzing what your if you use the optimal pick, what your probability is of going perfect and all that. There's so many moving parts that honestly, I'm just happy to be in a position to be part of those discussions.
Two questions for you. Have you guys had any dissenting opinions that have been like very much came down to the last second on a pick? And then how many games, Patrick asked a great question earlier regarding Survivor, how many games have you had where the flip of the coin, if it had gone the wrong way, you might be out?
Yeah, I mean, the smallest favorite that we've taken in terms of, you know, kind of looking at spreads, we had the Raiders over the Jets, you know, in the game with Antonio Pierce, I believe it was his first game, second game, whatever that was. That was one that we did have. You know, last week, I mean, obviously concerning seeing that big line move come in against Tampa Bay, where Carolina basically took money all week long because of Tampa Bay's injury report, interim coach bounce, whatever the case may be. So we definitely sweat that one out. But, yeah, you know, the nice thing is, I mean, I've known Mark for a long time, and we do have very productive discussions. We are largely on the same page. Even if we have disagreements with the teams that we're taking, you know, we still come to an agreement, and so far it has worked for us. But, you know, the one that I could think of specifically is a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to take Minnesota on Monday Night Football against the Bears. He liked the Titans, but we both liked the Colts. So we wound up going with the Colts, who did win in their game over the Buccaneers. But that was the one where, you know, things could have gotten a little bit dicey. And my thought process was, look, you know, we can isolate Monday night with the Vikings because there weren't a whole lot of good choices that week. We could isolate Monday night with the Vikings, see what our entry is worth, decide if we want to hedge, see if there's anybody who's interested in getting a piece of it, something like that. Ultimately, we stayed off of them, which was good because it was one of the most depressing games of the year, let alone the fact that the Vikings lost. But that was the closest I think we've been to not really being able to come to an agreement. So fortunately, you know, I mean, he trusts me, I trust him, and, you know, it's worked out so far, and hopefully we'll continue to.
Vikings, Patrick, real quick, lost that game on Monday Night Football. What happened to Tennessee that weekend?
Tennessee won. They beat, it was the Patriots, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So your partner's like, I'll take it from here, Adam. Adam Burke, VSiN.com. He's our managing editor. Nobody works harder. He's the best. He's got one of 30 remaining in Circa. Amal, just a few years back, got down. You got down to the final. What was the number?
Well, I was in the final 3 weeks, and I'm so mad at myself. I switched from my play. I had mapped out for the final 3 weeks, and I switched at the last second because the Bengals were starting Finley, the former NC State quarterback. I'm like, this guy's trash. And, of course, the Steelers lose that game.
Well, that is speaking of the issue here.
Speaking of the Steelers, I mean, last week we had Pittsburgh available against Arizona, and that was kind of the starting point that we both went with for the week. And then we were like, okay, but do we want to hold Pittsburgh back and take them on Thursday night against New England? And that's something that we really haven't done a whole lot. We've kind of planned to go 1-0 each week instead of stretching this thing out to go 20-0 and just kind of take what's in front of us and see what happens. So we wind up staying off of Pittsburgh thinking we can save them, and Pittsburgh loses, so we avoided that landmine. But then also, it's hard to take Pittsburgh this week now because Kenny Pickett got hurt. And you wouldn't have thought, and I kind of lamented this last week, you know, I wish I would have saved Jacksonville. We took Jacksonville against the Titans a few weeks ago. I was like, man, I wish we would have saved Jacksonville. Like, now they're facing Jake Browning. They're an 8.5-point favorite. They go up to 10. They still lose the game. So this has been one of those really strange years as well with all the backup and third-string quarterbacks playing where I never would have expected that Cleveland would even be a consideration for us this week, taking on Jacksonville. Now all of a sudden we're having the discussion, oh, is this maybe the week that we take Cleveland if Joe Flacco gets the start? Because he honestly looked pretty good. So that's been the interesting thing. Last week was the first time we really played for a future week, and it actually happened to work out for us for the current week. But again, I don't even know if we can entertain the idea of taking Pittsburgh now.
Patrick,
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say real quick, Adam brought up a great point. This has been, forget the fact that he's one of 32 remaining. This year, and you brought it up at the top of the show, the number of injuries for quarterbacks this year to be able to navigate this has been absolutely sensational. Because if you didn't use the Bengals somewhere in weeks 3 through 10, when are you using them?
We need to pull back the curtain and hear the conversation that you and your partner are having. Because, I mean, I don't, like Amal said, he had 3 weeks to go and he switched it up. I wonder, before you walk us through the conversation, do you start to tighten up a little bit now? You said it was pretty, quote, chill until Detroit loses. And then last night we're all of a sudden, oh my gosh, this is becoming a reality.
Yeah, I mean, the tone of the discussion has changed a little bit in the sense that now it's just about trying to figure out who we want to take. It's also about, you know, how do we position ourselves to make sure that we maximize the equity of this investment? Because, Yeah, I mean, I think the average implied value of an entry is around $310,000 now at this point. So, you know, you certainly want to get as much out of that as you possibly can. And it is still, again, like I mentioned, you still have six picks to make to actually win this thing. So, you know, there are a lot of those discussions. It's more now than just looking at the matchups and going, okay, who do we like? Who do we think we want to take this week? Now it's also, well, who do we like? Who do other people have? Who kind of benefits us and puts us in a better position and vice versa? That has dramatically changed for us over the last 2-3 weeks, being able to start, you know, talking to people and have those conversations as opposed to just who do we like. So that's definitely been the biggest change, I think. And, you know, again, I mean, I'm still kind of as chill as I possibly can be. But, you know, I'm sure that will change on Sunday as we're sweating out whatever team we take.
Do you ever think on Sunday night that you could be drafting your 2-week notice?
You know, it's funny. I was just over at Circa for a meeting, and Bill Ady and our GM, Len Meter, down there. And Len goes to me, he says, hey, so when you win, are you leaving? And I'm like, man, don't jinx me like that.
Don't jinx me like that. The answer is hell yes, no offense. When we return, more with Adam Burke, Sharp Money.